of course, it brought back to me memories, experiences that I wanted to stay away from. Necessarily, I had to face them again. I had to relive some parts of a very, very tragic stage of my life. The parts of Schindler and before. Television interviews, radio interviews, newspaper interviews, they all brought back terrible memories that I wanted to stay away from, but I couldn't. Because I am the only Schindler survivor in the state of Michigan. So I couldn't send somebody or go to somebody else. I had enough. Necessarily, they all focused on me. They all asked me as a sole survivor to give them interviews. The most memorable interview I had was with ABC, WTAD, very sweet Jewish lady. She works at WTAD. You know, I forgot her name. She works for the radio, news.
Deborah Fox?
No.
Okay.
She is a talk show. She's conducting talk shows.
Your interview was with Lynn Cullen.
Right. Okay. And she was the most gracious, sweetest interviewer. She made me feel great. By the way, thanks to her, I was on a national TV show, no, international, Larry King Live. Thanks to her. She channeled it in such a way. She gave me all the information. She made it happen. She made it happen. Contacted somebody, I don't know, they contacted me, you know, I was giving all the information about the people who are going to contact me, something like this. She made it possible for me to be on an international TV dish. They saw me in Israel, live, and they saw me in Italy, and somebody wanted an interview for me. Genova, you want an interview? They should come to Italy. I said to him, who is going to pay my way? I said, we'll talk about it sometime.
Have a lot of people contacted you that knew you from before or had questions about some of their families?
Yes. Many people contacted me. Many. Phone ringing all the time until I told my wife, please, that's it. I don't want any more interviews because it gets to me. You know, it's too much. It's too much. I can take so much and no more. As a matter of fact, this is my last one. Because I just feel overtaxed. I feel tired, emotionally tired. I want to have peace of mind. I want to forget things for a little bit, as much as I can, forget. And go on with music, focus on music, on my work, on my things, on my children here, on my duties, on my Russians here. See, I'm in charge of the Russian members. I speak to them. I try to teach them Judaism and so on. This is my work.
Has your music changed in the last few years?
I am creating every year things. It's quite possible that some of my creations have a inflection of the last two or three years of my experiences with the survivorship. It is possible. You see, when I write a piece of music, when I create a cantorial rendition, perhaps I do not analyze it, whether it has anything of my feelings, Holocaust experiences, feelings or not. It is quite possible that somebody else might detect it in it. Yes, but I did write in the past 3 years, I did write compositions. One composition I wrote is Modim Anachnula. As a matter of fact, this was my first composition after the movie came out. Modim Anachnula, which means we are thankful to you. And then my daughter, who has a very musical ear, heard it. She was extremely by it. And she said to me, "Daddy, I understand what you want to convey in this Modim Anachnula." She heard the key, she heard it. So this is for gentle inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Would you care to?
No, this is, you see, without a choir it would be sound. It has a harmonizing with the choir. The melody, the choir starts the melody. So I would have to invite the choir here. So, but there, it's a charge.
You mentioned the Russians, working with the Russians now.
Yes.
And since they were a lost people or lost to Judaism for so many years, do you relate to that? Do you feel a stronger...
I relate
tell us your
only
story.
To that.
Okay, tell us more about that.
I relate only to that because they were lost. Because they came here as little babies concerning knowledge of Judaism. They were like little babies, like starting from scratch. They knew nothing. And I made it as my project, my personal ambition, my personal task to teach them as much as I can, to bring them to the synagogue, to save their souls, because they were lost souls. And thank God today we have 95 families in our congregation, 95 families, which are about 130 people. They come to the synagogue, to the services. They come to study Torah with me. I speak Russian.
How many languages do you speak?
Seven.
What are they?
Well, English, Russian, Hebrew, German, Yiddish, Italian, and Romanian.
Where did you learn Italian?
Italian I learned by myself. I had to learn. You see me?
For singing?
For singing. I do sing in Italian, so I had 1 year Italian at Juilliard. You know Juilliard School?
Sure, of course.
I had 1 year Italian there. And then, of course, I was in Italy a few times, and listening to the Italian language, you learn a lot. So that when I come to Italy, nobody can tell I'm not Italian.
When you imitated the accent just now, I have a good friend who's married to the family who sounds just like her.
Not one. They say that I have special affinity, special talent in languages. English is, nobody taught me English. It's all self-taught language. Nobody taught me. I did never had any formal initiation. So it's sort of
good. And musically, have you, you were certainly the leading classical cantor of the country.
Yes, well, it's hard work, work. Never being satisfied with myself. There's always room for improvement, no matter how fine you sound. There's always room for improvement.
When did
I never rest on my laurels.
When did you decide you wanted to be a cantor?
Well, after the war. After the war, I decided that out of thankfulness for the divine redemption, I will not, and for the, out of thankfulness for the gift of music and of voice that I received from God, I will give it back to him in the form of being a cantor, conducting services, singing God's praises, instead of making money and feeling somewhere in an opera house or going to eat dog-eat-dog relationships, you know.
Were you ever a little sorry that you didn't go into the opera?
Never. Of course, I do sing opera arias, no question about it. I have my education at Juilliard was very worldly.
When were you at Juilliard?
When I came to this country, from 1957 to 1962.
You didn't come to the United States till 57?
Right.
Okay, you went first to Israel. Okay, and then how did you come to the United States?
I came here because I heard that there was a vacancy here, a very good position in New York City. So I decided to audition. And I did audition, and I was accepted.
Were you a cantor in Israel?
I was in Israel, yes. But of course, in Israel, possibilities for cantors were very, very limited, very small scope. And also for musical education. I wanted to be musically educated. I wanted to be a musician, besides being a cantor. I wanted to be a musician. Be a musician, a top flight musician, you have to go to the top flight musical institution for education. And I had a friend who is now a very famous conductor, his name is Kaplan.
His first name is? That was Abraham Kaplan?
Abraham Kaplan.
In, from New York?
From New York. He's, he's a famous conductor. A choral conductor. So he advised me when I want to become a musician, a top flight musician, to go to Juilliard. So I studied for entrance exams to Juilliard for 1 year. I had a coach who coached me to prepare for entrance exams at Juilliard. Then I was accepted with a full scholarship. For my education at Juilliard, I didn't pay 1 cent. It's all along scholarship.
And how many years were you there?
4.5. I got a diploma. And the 4.5 years made me a musician, a composer, because I'm not only a cantor, I'm a composer, to conduct a symphony orchestra. And some say I can sing.
You sing very beautifully.
I hope so. Of course, language is very important for Julia. bring. My fringe, garment, and a little spot. Juilliard was it's still a great institution where the finest musicians came from. From Cleburne, from Clyburn, or Clyburn, Cleburne. Kathleen Battle. Do I remember the Battle? She did Battle in Juilliard too, yes. And Tatiana Troyans, a lawyer from Tatiana. The great metropolitan opera star, Tatiana Troyans. She was my classmate. Mm-hmm. And you know who else was my classmate? Yitzhak Perlman.
So were you here last week when you were at the reception and when Yitzhak Perlman played? At the Y?
Yes, of course.
And what were you thinking when you heard him play Schindler's List?
He got a little bit of a swell head. He had a little bit of a swell head. You know, the fame which he now enjoys went a little bit in his head. And his playing is not the same as it was in the beginning. No, sorry.
What did you feel like when he played the encore of Schindler's List? When he played the encore of Schindler's List.
It was a PR move, a PR. But you see, he plays in such a way that I can play whatever I like, and you like, and how I like, and you always like me because I'm each like that. I don't like me. The same approach, unfortunately, now. Pavarotti. I'm Pavarotti. I'm going to sing for you whatever I like, and you like it, and you swallow it, and you eat it up. No matter what's good or bad or different, you eat it up. Whatever I give. Pavarotti was here at that time. People were very disappointed because he did not give his best. It was okay, but he didn't give his best. People, some artists get take for granted things. I am not. For me, every service is like an audition.
And
I always try to shine, to give my best. Every service or everything I do, I never take anything for granted. I'm Moshe Taube, they are going to like me before I open my mouth. No, this is not my style. Perhaps it's wrong. Perhaps it might shorten my life, but I cannot be different. So, do you understand?
Mm-hmm. That's a nice trait, to give it your best. Do you think that had some of the same qualities of how you were able to survive?
I told you, my survivorship was not what I was able to do or think or do or perform or...
Mm-hmm.
This had nothing to do with my survivorship. My survivorship had to do with my destiny to be a survivor, to survive the war. It had nothing to do with my personal traits or profession or character. My father, when he died, was 58.
And what brought you to Pittsburgh?
Well, vacancy.
Mm-hmm.
The life in New York became very nasty on the west side. If you couldn't go out or at 7 o'clock p.m. if you couldn't go out because it was things are as recent as this. The people moved out of my congregation. They were moving out to the suburbs and things like that. Mm-hmm. They were leaving in droves. I saw them writing on the walls. And my organization, the Kansas Assembly, told me, it's time for you to move. And we have a group's growing congregation for you. We are going to make Shidduch.
Mm-hmm.
So they made the Shidduch and...
And you came to Pittsburgh in what year?
1965. Almost 30 years ago. Almost.
Does this feel like home to you now?
Well, my home feels like home. My congregation, of course, feels like I belong here. And it belongs to me. There's a appreciation, much appreciation for my art, for what I stand for. After all, I am a very traditional man. I belong to the right wing of conservative, which is the traditional. I'm appreciated and respected, not because of it, but my spiritual affiliation, my spiritual outlook, my spiritual way of life. Perspective. It might be at variance with other views of other ways of life, but there is harmony, there is mutual respect. Many times I feel love. Special members, friends in the congregation. I thank God I have many friends in the congregation. But I also have loving friends, not just friends. Friends who want my best.
How would you most like to be remembered?
Our sages have set for the future.
Some people, I guess, that lived through some of your experiences of 50 years ago lost religion or questioned how could this have happened. Did you ever?
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the book. We do not understand all the aspects of the cosmos, all the aspects of our lives, of our organism, of our being. We don't understand all the aspects of it. Of Jewish history and world history. There are things beyond our grasp. There are things beyond our understanding. There are things that only divine knowledge by few can fathom. For those people who rebelled against religion, who rebelled, I can understand them. they did not have the preparation, the moral makeup, the spiritual background to understand and to contemplate and to see that there are things beyond human understanding, that within the human experience system, God is not a human being, or he does not do or destined things to happen according to the human understanding, human thoughts. His thoughts are not our thoughts. We cannot compare our thoughts and our feelings and emotions to divine emotions. They're completely different. There are things that we do not understand. There's eternity. Who can tell us what happened in our experience?
What are your hopes for the future?
My hopes for the future is that Israel will experience peace and achieve peace, real peace, not artificial, like we see today, but real peace, real acceptance by all. These are my expectations for the future, for Israel, for my people. I also have expectations and hopes for the future of the American Jewish community, which is adrift today, spiritually, completely adrift, will come back to the sources. The sources of our faith, the sources of our spiritual life, and the sources of our history. To the link, to create, to renew the link with our history. Our people, the link that is becoming, as I see, very dangerous. For my own hopes, for my own personal life in the future, I hope and pray that God should give me more years of voice in him, so that I should be able to be a source of pride to my communities and my family, or vice versa, my family and Jewish community.
Do you have a rigorous schedule for practice?
Yes.
Daily?
Yes. I always practice, always have workouts, you know, vocal workouts, so, you know, like a boxer. A boxer has to have workouts in order to keep himself in shape. I have to keep my voice in shape, and I do practice almost every day with vocalize.
And very beautifully. My father was lucky enough to sing with you in the choir, Maury Rubenstein, and Uncle Albert, and for many, many years.
Maury, my favorite. We always loved each other very much. Maury, we had to sing cousins. It's a fine friendship.
We would like to get a recording of you singing at some time, because it's so very, very special.
sometimes. And there is whenever you pass by, won't come by.
Have you taped the your new composition with the choir? Maybe we could do that.
There is a tape. I don't believe I have thousands of tapes.
One last thing before we're done today. You were talking about the hope for the Jewish community. Are there any directions that we could practically move toward to help our young people, to help the families?
Yes. Our young people can find content in their lives only